Are we ready to go? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the September 24th meeting, San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. As we convene, I will remind folks, if you're having trouble hearing the proceedings in chambers here, we do have hearing assist devices stored at both ends of the dais. And with that, if you would please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you please read changes to today's agenda?
Amendment number one to the September 24th, 2013 Board Agenda. The agenda is amended by switching the order of items 12 and 13 so they match the sequence in which they appear in the board packet and online. Addendum to item number 12, a resolution to ratify the existing master agreement. Staff is requesting that this item be pulled from the agenda to allow time to make a correction to the resolution. Addendum to item number 22, closed session. This addendum is to add the closed session descriptions to the agenda, which were inadvertently omitted when the agenda was printed. The items were available on the website for the public to review. This addendum also revises the descriptions, removing reference to SLOCPMPOA and correcting numbering sequences. Added item to consent. Request for approval of contract change order number one to the agreement with Sousa Construction Incorporated for the Sea Canyon Road slip-out repair in Avila Beach in the amount of $195,000. District 3. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
All right. Thank you. The core agenda did also have a listing for a closed session, but Council, we understand, in fact, we're not going to do closed session.
Yes, good morning, Rita Neal. It is correct that after the agenda was printed last week, we noticed that closed session was not identified. It was then published on Friday, and since that time, all items that were intended to go to closed session have fallen off, so we will have no closed session today.
All right. I've done over 2 years, and it happens only because of you guys' help, and of course the community. We started as a primary care. We only provided preventive medicine for the first 6 months. The services we have added now expands beyond the primary care, but also subspecialty. To just give you an example of what subspecialty, pretty much everything: a gastroenterologist, cardiologist, orthopedic surgeon, neurologist, kidney specialist, physical therapy, nutrition, amazing eye clinic. So every month we are adding an extra or new event to the clinic. One of the challenging part was obviously because the amount of patients that are waiting to get into the clinic has expanded as well. We have a three and a half month waiting period, and that's very hard for anybody to get sick and wait 3 months. So part of the money of the grant that you guys are giving us, allowing us to expand the clinic hours and days so we could reduce the 3 months waiting period to about 2 weeks to 2.5 weeks, and that's our goal. And hopefully we'll achieve that by the next 6 months. So we have delivered about $2.5 million worth of services free over the last year or so alone. Over 10,000 of free volunteer hours have been put through the clinic. And we're hoping to double that, or actually triple that, by opening more days. We are opening the dental clinic, which is the much-needed services in this county. So it's going to be the first free dental clinic in the county. And we have about 20 volunteer dentists already willing to participate. So part of the money also goes to support that portion of the clinic. And in the future, coming soon, we had the first hepatitis clinic in the county, which the physician comes from Bakersfield to volunteer his time. I'm opening the first, it's going to be the first pharmacy in the county, or actually in the country. So that will happen probably the next year or so. I'm working on it. And so there's a lot of opportunity for us to grow and serve the community. So thank you, guys. for all you have done.
Thank you, Dr. Nuristani. Supervisor Hill has a question.
Thank you, Dr. Nuristani. And, you know, obviously this board is very grateful to your work and the other doctors and healthcare professionals that make this free clinic possible. With the added money that I'm so glad that my colleagues were just as strong in wanting to help see your clinic grow. What specifically can we see in the next 6 months in terms of expanded hours, days, and how might other folks in the community? I know a lot of people who are accessing your services are working poor folks, you know, who are struggling to meet their bills and will wait for months to come to your clinic just if it's going to save them some really difficult health expenses. So what can we expect to see enhanced, and also, you know, how might others find out about this in the community?
As I said, we took the money and divided it over the whole year to see how many hours we could afford to get a nurse practitioner there, in association with volunteers. So I think we'll probably be opening about 15 extra hours, which is probably either 2 days of 8 to 7 hours, or 3 days, half days. So that translates to tripling the amount of patients that we have seen. We have seen so far over 2,800 patients. So I think, you know, just doubling that, maybe about around 5,000 to 6,000 visits, probably more. What also does, because right now we are an appointment system, we're hoping by creating, being open more days, we allow a couple visits for urgent needs. If somebody gets sick and cannot see physician now, we allow that spot, because right now it's by appointment only. So those two are important, I guess, because, as you know, when you get sick, you can't wait 3 months. So hopefully we have that spot available. But also gives us an opportunity that, because now we're open more days, the chances for people to volunteer is increased too. So we're hoping that when you have more days, volunteer could come in those days, and that also expedite and increase the number of patients we're going to see. The services, as I said, and also impact the services we had. Actually, I forgot to mention, we did about 6 or 7 surgeries that done through Dr. Hayashi's group, you know, value of over $100,000 donated. Also cataract and eye surgeries and being part of it. So I think that also implement that portion of it, because we could filter the patient through sooner. We'll have all the data for you available as usual in 6 months.
And how can the public find out a little bit more?
We're on the website, Slow Noor Foundation, SLONOOR foundation.org. Pretty much through that, or the website, and also we are advertising on the newspaper or as far as down Bakersfield, but very few.
And how are they made aware of your services?
You know, surprisingly, not a lot of people still don't know about the clinic. You know, word of mouth, or they heard somebody mentioning. We have been talking to a lot of organizations around the area to expand it. Pretty much on a weekly basis, I'm out and about talking to different groups. And as I said, we could do a better job in letting people know, especially when the next year comes in and we're trying to provide some sort of services to educate people to see if we could enroll them in one of the programs when Affordable Care kicks in. So, you know, I think we could do a better job, and whatever recommendation you guys could give so we could reach those population would be great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Invite him to your service clubs, those of you throughout the county. He does a good job on that.
Outstanding stuff.
Thank you,
Doctor.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Doctor. Ms. Tacker, followed by Tammy Douglas Schatz.
Good morning. That is a tough act to follow, and my hat is off to Dr. Nuristani and his dedicated volunteers. Today I'm here to speak to item 2 on your consent calendar, and that is the donation or the allocation of a $2,000 grant to the Oceano Community Advisory Council. I know the council is grateful for the funds. My personal feelings on this are conflicted. I understand that council has not been funded since 2010-2011, that fiscal year at that time. And it's odd to me that this funding is happening without a District 4 supervisor, and that the funds are coming from District 3. My first concern is the people in District 3 and what the funds should have gone to or should go to. And then my concerns for District 4 and Oceano in particular is that Mr. Hill is championing the equestrian access to run through the community of Oceano on the airport property and moving it away from the Grover Beach Lodge that's in his district. And I don't want any confusion that that the Oceano Community Advisory Council would be in any way beholden to you for this funding. It occurs to me that we are close to getting a new supervisor for District 4, and this funding could have waited just a few more weeks, and that supervisor could have funded it. I just don't want there to be any confusion that, that the work of the volunteers on the advisory council will not compromise the integrity of their community for projects that they don't support.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Ms. Douglas-Schatz, followed by Jim Harrison.
Thank you, Chairman Gibson, members of the board. I want to speak to item 8 on your agenda, which is an MOU between the Sheriff's Management Association and the county. I want to take a few minutes to thank the Sheriff's Management Association. They represent your sheriff's chief deputies, commanders, and correctional lieutenants. And we had a successful bargaining session. We had a mutual understanding that the county is hopefully at the tail end of 7 difficult budget years. But because we are still pulling out of that, we are made an agreement that we would hold wages steady for 2 more years and that the association would pick up half of the about 1% increased pension cost. We did come up, though, with a creative way to address an inequity issue by agreeing to a non-pensionable way to address this equity issue. Specifically, there's a career incentive program for sheriff's management. If they achieve a management certificate through peace officer standards and training, they can achieve this non-pensionable pay increase. So it really was a mutually beneficial agreement, and I hope that you will approve this to your MOU. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schatz. Thanks also to the Sheriff's Management group. Let me add mine. That was extraordinarily creative work there in tough times that we're yet a few some months away from seeing behind us, I think. Finally, Mr. Harrison.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Honorable Board. My name is Jim Harrison. I'm from the Pomo. And I am on the board of directors for Ragnar Pomo. When we saw this, we were really concerned, and it's item 11, and it was on page 6, item number 6. I sent you each an email. However, since then, we've got some supposedly clarification from a Mr. Johnson, who's a senior planner for this project. I, in the future, would just like to see this changed a little bit, the wordage on this particular one, because it says, no authorization for public trespass. Yet Mr. Johnson assures us that the trails that are being constructed are open for much.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. That, with that, close public comment, bring it back to the board. I'll ask colleagues if they have items they'd like to pull for separate consideration or vote. Mr. Hill.
Just comment on 2 and 8.
Ms. Arnold.
Maybe if County Council could kind of clarify or address Mr. Harrison's concerns.
11, so 11, we'll have
on
that.
On number 11.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Meacham.
That's all I want.
All right. Mr. Hill, on
yes.
Number 2.
The question came up on, obviously, as people know, in the aftermath of Paul Teixeira's death, we've all wanted to make sure that we can do the best that we can to keep things moving in District 4 from having his legislative aide work on constituent issues to funding things, which is something that I've done willingly. And as for any suggestion, I don't even know who's on the Oceano Advisory Council, so I'm not sure how that conspiracy works, but it was just a matter of continuing to help District 4 funding requests be met until there's a new appointment. So that's about as exciting as it gets for that one.
All right. On to number 8.
And number 8, I too wanted to add my voice of thanks to our sheriff's management and the continuation of a lot of our associations and groups. Their willingness to work with us has been extraordinary, and I think has helped to continue to project a very good image on our county organization. I think people in the community realize that the public servants who work in our community in all of the different ranges of services, from sheriff's management to the people who take care of our properties, everybody has been willing to step up and sacrifice and work with us, and that's been one of the reasons why we are in such a better situation than most of our brother and sister counties. So thank you.
Supervisor Arnold, on that matter, or are we going to move on to 11?
Think quick. I just wanted to shout out to the sheriff and the undersheriff are here, and wanted to say thank you as well, or pass it around. We do appreciate that, being able to work through these things. Thank you.
All right. Then to 11, between council and maybe Mr. Johnstone, we can get this clear, council?
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council, on item number 11. It should be made clear that within all of these maps that are being accepted, and I believe this is the seventh such map, within this development there are a number of trail easements. And those trail easements do allow use for purposes of the trail. There's standard language also in all of our agreements that we don't allow trespassing or unauthorized use, and that just gives us the ability to track if there's something occurring out there which is inappropriate, not inconsistent with the use of a trail. So the equestrians, walkers, runners, these trails are still available, but it's standard for us to put no trespassing in order to make sure it's used for the public's benefit.
Thank you.
We're good on that. I would then entertain a motion on our amended consent calendar.
Move approval as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. With that, Madam Clerk, a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. That brings us then to our presentation calendar. I would entertain a motion for presentations. Thank you, Mr. Meacham.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Another roll call vote, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. Let me punch through the security here. I have to confess that I don't remember which the first presentation was. That would be rideshare month.
Rideshare.
So that would be me. So, if Ms. Jenkins would come to the lectern, I am pleased to read a resolution proclaiming October 2013 is Rideshare Month, and October 9th, 2013 is International Walk to School Day in San Luis Obispo County. This resolution reads as follows. Whereas transportation choices, including carpooling, vanpooling, taking the bus, walking, biking, or working from home, reduce road congestion, reduce commuter costs, preserve air and water quality, and improve personal health. And whereas Rideshare Month will include $1,000 cash prizes and outreach events, including more parks, less parking, cash vanpool, cash carpool, weigh your commute, good morning commuters, bike and pedestrian breakfasts, and Transit Tuesdays to encourage using sustainable transportation choices. And whereas Slow Regional Rideshare, as a division of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, provides information, programs, and services on sustainable transportation choices for people living, working, and visiting San Luis Obispo County. And whereas Slow Regional Rideshare will provide skin from the far reaches of the county and all the other good stuff. So. Thank you, Mallory. Appreciate it. Our second presentation is a resolution on Slow Green Apple Days of Service. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Jennifer and Victoria would come to the lectern, please. Victoria Kronza and Jennifer McIntyre. This is a resolution proclaiming September 27th, 28th as Slow Green Apple Days of Service in our county. Whereas Green Apple is a global movement to put all children in schools where they have clean and healthy air to breathe, where energy and resources are conserved, and where they can be inspired to dream of a brighter future. Whereas on September 27, 28, 2013, the California Central Coast Chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council, in conjunction with many agencies and community partners, will celebrate this movement with Slow Green Apple Days of Service, in which green projects and programs will take place in schools throughout our county. These local green projects include the planting of a community garden and programs such as Bike to School Day, Power Down Day, and Zero Waste Week. And children in green schools are healthier and much more productive because green schools emphasize excellence in areas such as daylighting, thermal comfort, and classroom design, which have been shown to improve children's well-being and ability to learn. And the benefits of a cleaner indoor air quality have been linked to lower asthma rates, fewer allergies, improved teacher satisfaction, and reduced absenteeism. And whereas the Board of Supervisors supports energy efficiency and the improvement of school environments, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September 27th and 28th as Slow Green Apple Days of Service in San Luis Obispo County, encourages the participation of all government officials and agencies, as well as local schools and community partners, to participate.
So I'm assuming here that everyone either lives in a home, goes to a school, works somewhere. So buildings are pretty important to everybody. Other than food, it's pretty much our next most basic need. And so we'd like to really thank you for the opportunity today to come here to open this dialogue about how resource conservation and building efficiency can really be an opportunity for fiscal savings. Our economy has been recessed for the last few years. Our school districts have been strapped. And this is a way that through simple building efficiency measures and resource conservation measures, we have the opportunity to save some money. Lucia Marr School District, over an 18-month period, saved about $200,000, and they continue to accrue savings, and they're looking for new opportunities for additional savings. So I believe in order for our young people to be competitive in the current workforce, they're going to have to manage all the resources, and these are the types of resources they're going to have to also manage. So instilling these types of habits both in our schools and our communities, it's not a matter of environmentalism. It's a matter of teaching our children fiscal responsibility. So I'd like to thank you again by allowing us to begin this discussion with the Green Apple Days of Service and helping us to set our young people up for success. Thank you. Appreciate I also would just like to quickly say we have our program called Gateway to Green Schools. It was a pilot program set up with three schools. We had an elementary school, a grade school, and a high school, Mission College Prep, Lewis Middle School in Paso, and Bishop's Peak Elementary, all starting at the same time. It's a seven-step sustainability school program, all started in the fall. And they're all going to finish in the next couple weeks, but Bishop's Peak's going to finish on Friday. They'll be presented their $500 check and mini grant, and we're really, really excited. It's a program where they've worked really hard to look at their school very thoroughly, metric their school, so they know exactly what their usages are for everything and have a system of now in place of looking at where they can go and a plan of where they can go to save money from here. So we're very excited about that. All right. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Let me, before you leave the lectern, how if folks are interested in some more details on what's going on and the days of service and your program throughout the year, how would they go about doing that?
www.usgbcc4.org.
Okay. Very good. Yep. One more time, since that was a bit of, by county government standards, that was excellent alphabet soup.
Right? It's USGBC.
Right.
C4.org.
All right. Very good. Victoria, sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you guys personally as well. And and also I would like to invite you guys to kick off Green Apple Day of Service, which is all over the world on Friday. Some of the schools have actually started doing Green Apple Week, which we're really excited about. Not so much how to sort waste and what's important and what's not important for doing that, but changing the culture of the campus. And the kids and I talked a lot about behavior changes and what it really means to change the status quo of the school. So I think that this is extremely important. I just wanted to say thank you again. And if we can see you Wednesday night, we hope that you can join us. So you can find that out on usgbcc4.org.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Victoria. I'll look forward to seeing you on Wednesday night. With that, our final resolution to be read by Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's interesting. Wine, beer, and green apples.
Yeah.
It's my privilege to read this resolution designating October as the San Luis Obispo County Domestic Violence Awareness Month. One in four women will experience domestic violence during her lifetime, and whereas approximately 15.5 million children are exposed to domestic violence each year, our county's women's shelter provide a variety of direct and preventative services to victims of domestic violence. In particular, last year providing 9,749 nights of shelter and 13,210 nights in transitional housing, with over 60% of those shelter nights provided to children exposed to domestic violence. Whereas San Luis Obispo County government agencies, including the District Attorney's Victim Witness Assistance Center, the Department of Social Services, the Probation Department, and the County Health Agency work closely with county women's shelters, CAPSLO, and other community partners in order to provide a multitude of crisis and support services to families affected by domestic violence. And whereas we must continue our commitment to address the behaviors and causes of this crime so that each and every home in our county can be a place of peace and safety, therefore be it resolved that the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors designates the month of October 2013 as San Luis Obispo County Domestic Violence Awareness Month and urges all citizens to observe this month by not only increasing their awareness of the crime of domestic violence, but also by supporting those who work toward its end.
If I may, good morning, Jerry Shea, District Attorney. I want to thank you as a board for recognizing domestic violence as an important issue in this county by proclaiming next month as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. I really appreciate that, especially on behalf of the Domestic Violence Task Force, which has been meeting for the last 17 years in this county. I've done a great job, and I also appreciate the fact that the board has supported the efforts of the Domestic Violence Task Force over that period of time. I'd like to ask a couple members of the task force to speak to you a little bit about domestic violence and about some of the upcoming events with regard to the Domestic Violence Awareness Month. One is Beth Robb, who is the Director of Volunteer and Outreach Services for the Women's Shelter Program in San Luis Obispo, and the other is Cindy Marie Apsey, who is, of course, the Victim Witness Director for our office. So, Beth.
Thank you, Jerry. Good morning, and thank you for once again supporting ending domestic violence in our county and supporting the different shelters. I'm Beth Robb from the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo, and we appreciate all the support throughout the year, whether it be coming to an event or modeling in our show or, you know, supporting us through other means, through funds and everything. So we do have a couple events this year. The one we do have coming up right away is Ask, Listen, Act, and this is on October 10th. And people can register on our website, which is womensshelterslo.org. And what we're going to be talking about this year, this is the third year, we're going to be talking about accessing mental health services for victims of family violence or survivors of family violence. And we're going to have Elisa Legan from Behavioral Health come speak. We're going to have panelist Dan Dow, the DA, is going to come do a case study. And, of course, we have a survivor speaking, who has been through the process and is out and safe now. And so really we're hoping to give that advanced training to people who serve victims, who are coming out of family violence and trying to provide a safe, healthy home. Because it does happen here in San Luis Obispo County. It's beautiful. It's paradise. But at the women's shelter, we saw an increase of 15% in our service requests and who we served just this last fiscal year. So the awareness is coming up, and the services are definitely needed, so we appreciate that support. On your desk there, you should get a brochure. Inside is a little awareness ribbon for you to wear for the month of October, and also a sticker for file cabinets or windows, And then also a little flyer talking about all the different events we have. Ask, Listen, Act coming up first. We also have a fundraiser. We have two fundraisers. One is for RISE up in the North County, which is on their website, and we have Far East on our website. And then we're also very excited to do an art show this month, or November.
Tremendous accomplishment by the activists and advocates in domestic violence in the state who have worked tirelessly to change and amend laws that support and protect victims of domestic violence. And then finally, I'd like to take just a moment to really commend the work of the advocates, both the shelter advocates and the victim witness advocates who work with domestic violence victims. Because of the nature of intimate partner violence, many victims are reluctant to seek help and reluctant to receive help. And so, naturally, those cases can pose a number of challenges for advocates. At the same time, they are also often the most rewarding cases. Time and time again, I've seen victim witness advocates working with a survivor of domestic violence, often with her children, and getting the support and assistance for that victim, whether it's a criminal protective order, relocation to a safe location, linking her with the women's shelter or with CAPSLO, with mental health services. It really makes a world of difference to help those victims rebuild their lives and go on to live productive, healthy, safe lives. So my hat is off to the many advocates in our county who work with those victims day in and day out. And thank you again for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Evesy. Mr. Shea, are you going to wrap it up for us here?
I'll just wrap it up again by saying thank you very much for your support. The Domestic Violence Task Force has worked very hard over the years, and they continue to work hard. Suni Marie Ebsey, I think, mentioned some of the legislation that we've been not only tracking but also supporting, and I think that kind of is a recognition of those efforts. So appreciate your support, and hope that you can come out to some of the events that that Beth has talked about. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Shea. Mr. Hill?
I just wanted to thank Beth, I wanted to thank you and certainly all the great staff at the Women's Shelter. Besides the essential services that you provide, one of the things that you exemplified just this morning is the Women's Shelter does such a great job of partnering with other agencies in our community, other nonprofits, other governmental agencies, and that's so critical. Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you, I know, at the Far East one and other events. This is certainly one of our model programs in our county, and so thank you. And please express our gratitude to the entire organization.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for saying that. And I would like to say that in 2014, we're very honored to celebrate our 35th year in this county. Right. So we've been here a long, long time. Grassroots, two women literally used their own resources to start us in Morro Bay all those years ago. So we're very humbled and honored to be here still.
Thank you. And thanks again to all those who work confronting some of the most heinous and depressing aspects of humanity with hope and with energy. And we can't say enough about how we appreciate that. Thank you. With that, then we come to public comment for items not on the agenda. Have speaker slips here that represent just under an hour's worth of public comment, so I will ask that we be efficient. We'll start with Sherry Lewis, followed by Eric Greening, please.
Good morning. I am Sherry Lewis from San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. A couple weeks ago, several of us were here to urge you to attend the October 7th meeting with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They are meeting in a dozen locations around the country to get feedback about the way nuclear power companies currently store their highly radioactive spent fuel. This spent nuclear fuel is hotter and more radioactive than before it was used to generate electricity, and it must be placed in pools for 5 years until it's cool enough to be put into dry casks, which are air-cooled. The pools are densely packed, and if the top 18 inches become uncovered by water containing boron to stop fission, the rods will heat and ignite, releasing devastating fallout downwind for several hundred miles. This is known as a pool fire. The original configuration of the fuel assemblies in the pools included a safety feature, which ensured that even if water leaked out of the pool, the assembly rods would be far enough apart that they wouldn't catch on fire and ignite each other. But there is no safe, permanent repository for the waste, and making more dry casks is very expensive. Consequently, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has allowed plants to re-rack the pools 5 times more densely, making the spent fuel all the more vulnerable to accident or to terrorist attacks. Nuclear scientists are challenging the wisdom of this decision, and so the NRC is holding hearings to decide whether to enforce a return to the safer racking of pools. The NRC may be committed to the safety of the public and the environment.
Julie Tacker.
Do you think you'll be able to put this on an agenda?
We've directed staff to do that last week.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. I am Eric Green, and I'll begin by endorsing the remarks of Sherry Lewis and asking for exactly what she's asking for. I also would like to thank Paavo for his presentation last week. However, it should have been agendized under the Brown Act. If he knew he was going to give such a presentation, it should have been known to the public that it was going to be a presentation. So I'm thankful that he did bring the material, but in the future, such things should be properly agendized. The next couple of questions I'm not asking for a discussion or presentation here, but a quick response relative to timing or dates would be welcome. First of all, my question is on the timing of the release of the updated Paso Robles groundwater basin model so that it can be a source of information for our future discussions and decisions about that critical resource. I understand we're going to have an agenda item in a week to update the urgency ordinance, or at least to reaffirm the urgency ordinance, but obviously further decisions will be better made with the more information, the better. Next question on timing is the timing of the selection of the director of planning and building. That seems to have fallen into a sort of a hole of forgetfulness, and I'm asking partly to make it clear that some of us out in the public are noticing that it seems to have been forgotten and are hoping it doesn't get forgotten. I know Cammie is doing yeoman service as acting director, but she has not been empowered as director, and either she or someone ought to be to have some real concerted leadership for the important times ahead. And finally, I want to thank Frank Meacham for taking an interest in the issue of the ocean blasting and the blanket permit, which, in fact, the State Lands Commission did issue last Friday, and they did certify the negative declaration, and I think they did so very, very irresponsibly. With a negative declaration, you don't even need to make findings that it's a needed or important project. They don't have overriding considerations with a negative declaration. With a negative declaration, they have to be able to assert that no fair argument can be made that there may be a significant impact on the environment. And in fact, such a fair argument is in the record of the correspondence on that negative declaration and on the testimony relative to the certification. So if this is something the county wants to take an issue in, interest in, it's a statewide blanket permit, but the estimate is that 55.8% of the use of it would be in the Central Coast, and we don't know who or for what, because there's an including but not limited to weasel wording.
Thank you. Mr. Greening, Ms. Tacker, followed by Elsa Dawson.
Good morning. I'm Julie Tacker from District 2. I live in Los Osos, and I, too, thank Paavo for the presentation last week. I second the motion that Mr. Greening just made, that it should have been agendized and actually should have had a staff report to show you what I'm going to show you today. Mr. Ogren presented this map. That is his circle. Annette was generous enough to send me this map after last week's presentation. I've put an arrow here. This circle that Mr. Ogren has shown you is the place that he says dewatering for the Los Osos wastewater project's construction is taking place. He circled that in error. I was a bit surprised. This is the same circle on a plan view, west of the project area, outside of the project area, and about 40 feet above sea level. I want to go back. Mr. Ogren's circle and sea level is this straight line. He's got dewatering going on above sea level, away from the bay, west of the project area. He misrepresented the facts. This is an overall map. There are these areas in red where the pipes need to be buried below the groundwater levels, and dewatering is taking place in all of these areas. But here is Mr. Ogren's circle outside of the project area. What Mr. Ogren, supported by Mr. Gibson, tried to tell you is that there's no impact to the drinking water supply by the dewatering of these areas in Los Osos. The dewatering along the bay.
Good morning, Elsa Dawson, San Luis Obispo. I want to thank Mr. Meacham this morning for his comments last week about being committed to doing what's best for our county. We're in 100% agreement with that. And we're not up here asking questions about really some global effort that's way out there. It's closer than you think. More than 1.4 million ranchers and farmers across America have been intentionally removed from their properties, their farms, their long-time family farms, and that's due to the policies that we're asking about. So that's our country. But in Northern America, the battle is heating up in Siskiyou County, and that's our state. So the danger is not out there. It's on our doorstep. And you can do something. This is the exciting news. The local officials have been given great power in the Federal Land Policy and Management Act. And that's precisely why ICLEI and other similar organizations are targeting local officials and luring their allegiance. They understand the great authority that local officials have. We're assuming by Mr. Gibson's comments last week that our questions are not worthy of serious response. And from Mr. Hill's comments that because there are only five or six of us, that you're not really interested in what we have to say. Well, perhaps we need to rally more people. We'd be willing to. How about the amount that came from Napomo Mesa? You were very sympathetic to them. Or maybe the dry well people. If we got that many people up here, then would we be worthy of your time? I know that you probably hope that your irritable and caustic reactions are hoping to intimidate us and make us go away, but actually your adamant resistance to our requests is increasing our curiosity, what was curiosity, but now is a growing suspicion that there is something that you are desperately denying and don't want to be brought publicly. And that's the point. Having Ms. Arnold look up information or be briefed does not satisfy a public look at what your agreement is with ICLEI and what that is, what that will mean for our county. So I respectfully request agendizing ICLEI once again.
Thank you, Ms. Dawson. Mr. Dawson, followed by Terry Strickland.
Good morning. Tom Dawson. Isn't the green movement just wonderful? I wonder what else the movement's up to. I was very sorry to hear about the last meeting last week when Supervisors Gibson and Hill refused to face up to their own actions concerning their involvement in ICLEI. I simply cannot believe Mr. Gibson and Mr. Hill are unaware of ICLEI's commitment to bring the UN globalist land use policies to San Luis Obispo County. However, they may not be aware that ICLEI insists on giving special attention to the rights of indigenous peoples and minorities. ICLEI is directed by the United Nations and is in lockstep with all environmental, non-governmental organizations worldwide. They help target lands and resources for taking. The treatment and taking these United Nations environmental non-governmental organizations have perpetrated on more than 20 million indigenous people worldwide is stated quite well by Mac Chaplin, who writes in World Watch magazine and Environmental Movement publication. A Conservation International biologist who worked for the, worked with the Kayapo Indians in lower Zengu region of Brazil told me, he says, quite frankly, I don't care what the Indians want. We have to work to conserve biodiversity. This last comment may sound crass, but I believe that it accurately represents the prevalent way of thinking within the large conservation organizations. Although they won't say it openly, the attitude of many conservationists is that they have the money and they're going to call the shots.
I got the chance to watch the incredible bad behavior once again by some of the board. I'd like to talk about the people of Los Osos. I don't know any of these people personally, but I applaud them for coming here week after week. You have no idea what it's like for these people to fight for an issue that affects their life every day. I was involved with the Casmelia Toxic Waste Site, helped a large group get that closed, but it took us 9 years to do that. And when that first started, when we brought that to the public, to the Board of Supervisors in Santa Barbara County and all the agencies, they thought we were all crazies. We weren't crazy, but it took 9 years to get that toxic waste site closed. And it's a shame that people like that have to fight bureaucrats, elected public servants who are supposed to be fighting for them. That's shameful. Because of my involvement with the toxic waste site, I've spent a lot of time at board meetings in Santa Barbara County. I have to tell you that whether any, I haven't seen any board members in the last 30 years in Santa Barbara County who have not been civil and respectful, not only to their fellow board members, but to the public. You fellows wouldn't last very long in Santa Barbara County. The South County liberals would not put up with your bullying tactics, especially against a woman. And we shouldn't put up with it either. You know, when you say things like, I just think you need to exercise a certain amount of critical thinking. How arrogant, Mr. Hill. Mr. Gibson, let me discuss the question of ICLEI. On the matter of ICLEI, the folks who are coming are spinning the most outrageous conspiracy theories. As the younger people would say, are you kidding me? You know, if you don't understand the issue, maybe you should quit listening to staff and talk to some experts that know what they're talking about. And when you tell Ms. Arnold that when she asserts that the matter should be discussed in public and you say, I don't think that's the purpose of the board, I don't understand it. And Mr. Hill talks about collab and Tea Party people, accusatory, angry, paranoid. That sounds like you, Mr. Hill. You know, the people in this chamber are not crazy, and you can throw people out every day if you want. Whatever. We're coming back. This is still America. Mr. Meacham, stand up and be counted. Don't let these bullies wreak havoc.
Thank you, Ms. Strickland. Dr. Height, followed by Ben DeFada.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos, I want you to think on this. What personal sacrifice have you made for your country? and what sacrifice has your family made for this country that would make you feel privileged, entitled to dictate who is worthy of the democratic process and who is not? At times, the isolation in Taiwan was so difficult, I confided in my mother how unbearably painful it could be, and she responded, "We are doing it for our country. We are doing it for our country, and that is what made it bearable. We are doing it for our country. I did not do it for you. I did not bear the isolation, the separation, the terror for anyone who takes liberties with free speech, the right to free speech, and the Brown Act. I would suggest that the Brown Act is not satisfied with the intimidating, tyrannical approach to public comment, to board comments, to the public's attempt to warn you of your significant exposure. The United Nations is not our enemy. It took an enormous effort following World War II to bring the nations to the table to avoid World War III. And still, we had conflict and oppression. The Berlin Wall, Korean War, Cuban Missile Crisis, Vietnam, genocide, and limited military reactions. Despite my personal sacrifice, despite my family's sacrifice, and lifetimes of service, I would never pretend that the only valid argument is one that agrees with me. I would never publicly defame, dismiss, and deny the opportunity for the public to have information, to have the opportunity to participate in the democratic process. I did it for them. For the right to express opinions I will never agree with. I did it for the women, for the individuals, for the communities, for those struggling for Los Osos. I did it for those you would make powerless, not for the power brokers. Shame on you. What have you done to my democracy? And a side note, if you agendize some of these items that the public is asking for, if there was a hearing...
Your answers. What's happening in Washington, D.C. is happening in this state and here in this county, in this chamber. Sit down and shut up is what you really want. Is that the way you treat the people that pay your salary? The people here and everywhere in this nation are concerned that this once great nation is slipping away right before our eyes because of your progressive liberal actions that is causing the meltdown of this nation. See how this all ties in? Shut down your competition at any cost to advance your agenda. I'll cut it short, Mr. Gibson. You seem to want a half a day every time we come up here off. Los Osos has many elderly and veterans that are one step from a nursing home, retirees that retire many years ago that inflation has ate away their life savings. Many disabled are on welfare already, and many low-wage earners or those that work part-time are to the point that these people would have no problem qualifying for the sewer relief program that you and Ogre are going to open up the department, I guess. We have to hire more people. But the hard-working middle-class people that struggle every day to earn a living would not be able to qualify and eventually would have to find cheaper housing and move. Another case of destroying the middle class. Shame on you. Thank you so much, I think.
Right. Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Ms. Owen, followed by Jeanette Watson.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I will briefly apologize for last week's outburst and my removal from the chambers here, and I'll try to have more self-control. But when Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Hill and Public Works Director Pavel Ogren, I will do that when they stop lying and stifling the truth and when they stop bullying their fellow supervisors, especially Debbie Arnold. Deal? Briefly, last week, Public Works Director Ogren suggested that the LOCSD letter that was written to this board, cease and desist on the project dumping our important 8 to 16 million gallons a day of dewatering into the bay rather than put it where it was supposed to be put, was insignificant. Please. Then Mr. Ogren said it was the same CSD that had caused the first sewer project to fail, as well as to send the district into bankruptcy. Please. All this happened with a previous CSD, all while Public Works Director Ogren was having an illicit affair with married CSD Director Kelly. It clearly influenced the end results of both the sewer design and our bankruptcy. That pillow talk came from a very different service, community services district, and Los Osos got shafted. The dewatering concerns were not debunked with Ogren's special presentation map. As Ms. Tacker explained, he didn't even know what he was pointing to. The project is not meeting its permit approval requirement, which was to take the water across town and put it up at the Brotherson leach field, which we spent money on. It's completed. The pipe needs a little bit more completion. What's the matter with doing what was... That's how they got the permit. They were never going to be permitted to dump this water in the bay. And because the project, it's cheaper to dump in the bay, and the project is running, you know, way over budget, they're taking shortcuts. That's not an appropriate shortcut. Dumping anybody's drinking supply, and that is fairly decent water, into the ocean is just not acceptable in this county and under the conditions that we have with drought. And then the other issue was the restoration of the damaged shoulders and right-of-ways, and he said that it was just a few insignificant piles of dirt that he didn't know where they were when I showed pictures of what's happening with the shoulders and the right-of-ways have been destroyed in Los Osos. Over half of them are destroyed because half of the project has been, the pipes have been put in. The conditions of construction do require that they be restored. Postponing or ignoring the need for restoration only extends the bad air quality, keeps neighborhoods from getting their lives back to normal. Parking and walking in loose sand is totally inconvenient. In six
Thank
weeks,
you.
When rain season begins, these 20-some miles Thank of shoulders must be restored.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Ms. Watson, followed by Mike Brown.
My name is Jeanette Watson. In the recent past, Supervisors Gibson and Hill went to an ICLEI meeting in Santa Barbara and signed the ICLEI Resilient Community Agreement. This agreement has many implications for the policy direction of SLO County. A few months ago, Gibson and Hill had not heard of ICLEI and or Agenda 21, and the public speakers who brought up the topic were alleged to be using scare tactics. At a recent board meeting, Supervisor Arnold requested that two or three items at this meeting be agendized. She asked that the ICLEI viewpoint. ICLEI basically endorses severe government expansion, regulations, and massive theft of the public's wealth. I approve of one member's recommendation that the subject of ICLEI be agendized for an open public hearing. Some male members of this Board of Supervisors are calling those who speak the truth about ICLEI as extreme elements of the people, and those who oppose don't represent what is best for the community. It seems that only the self-appointed members of the board, those who signed the agreement, know what is best for the people of SLO County, and those members are the ones who signed the ICLEI agreement without public input. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Mr. Brown, followed by Bill Pelfrey.
Want to reset. Mike Brown representing CoLab. We would again request that you agendize the issue of two supervisors signing the ICLEI agreement for resilient communities for a hearing and discussion with full public discussion outlining the purposes of ICLEI. Particularly, and I would again refer to you to Chapter 1.7 of the ICLEI Principles. You can go on our website at colabslo.org and see several writings about ICLEI. There's a weekly update for this week. There's also the September newsletter, which gets into it. And there are links to ICLEI's several websites. Last week, you had quite a protracted discussion. It actually took me quite a while to transcribe all the speaking. You know, in the California open meeting law, according to the League of Cities guide, says that when a member of the public raises an issue which has not yet come before the legislative body, the item may be briefly discussed, but no action may be taken at the meeting. And that goes to section 54954.3A of the statute. So that discussion was a lot more than brief, and it was pretty severe, and it was pretty nasty in some ways. And we think, actually, you know, you ought to go back now and correct by actually discussing the subject. You know, as to the qualifications or mindset of the people who come here and comment about these matters, you know, that's not really for you to interpret. You're elected here to represent everybody. And, you know, again, the guide says, when a member of the public testifies before a legislative body, the body may not prohibit the individual from criticizing the policies, procedures, programs, and services of the agency or the acts or omissions of the legislative body. And, you know, you didn't prohibit people physically from discussing it, but your dialogue was pretty severe and intimidating for the people in power. And remember, the people out here are relatively powerless. Reschedule this item.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Pelfrey, followed by Edward Veek.
Bill Pelfrey, Templeton. First off, I'd like to apologize to this board for my outburst last week. However, this board, as well as many others, has took a stance against bullying. I will stand up when somebody bullies somebody else, or when they try to intimidate, such as part of this board did when they said the speakers are fringe radical ideologists and the people with a political agendas. That's what you have. And the collegiality air. Well, what kind of collegiality kicks people out and tells them they can't speak? Now, don't we have enough problems handling our drought conditions, an economy that's in trouble, and the loss of property values we have sustained? Why should we also have to deal with the dictates of political politicians corrupted by ideals and ideologies of extreme environmental elitists who listen to the beat of a different drum, the Ickley drum, who seek to take away our constitutional rights for their own gain? I ask you, is it an honorable position to do more damage to this country, our rights, and our way of life? After all, environmental, social, and economic equitable communities with resilient, strategic, or smart growth principles already exist. You work where you live, and they are eminently walkable, with a valid transportation system between communities, beyond their boundaries, and animals move freely in complete and open environment, which goes against the very basics of our Constitution. Who is it that fears and does us want us to talk about ICLEI? Where is their loyalty and honor? Thank you.
Mr. Veek, followed by Gary Kirkland.
When I sign or pledge something, it's something that I'm proud of. For example, when I joined the United States Navy, I pledged to support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. There is no expiration date to that pledge. Mr. Hill and Mr. Gibson have made a pledge also. I want to know what it is that Mr. Hill and Gibson are so fearful of revealing to the public. I want a public disclosure of, tell me what you're talking about and what you're doing. Mr. Hill referred to the organization called CoLab last week, which is the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and
Business.
Thank you. Business. These groups represent the interests of our community. These people are the people to whom he was dedicated to support and regulate rules and regulations. The disparaging reference has also been towards those who are members of the Tea Party. The Tea Party believes in the adherence to the Constitution, a free market economy, that's also called capitalism, and fiscal responsibility. Those are not the objectives of ICLEI.
that some supervisors have signed a pledge to support. Does the supervisors have a problem with those principles? If you do, I would equate your thinking to that of the Hitler Youth in Nazi Germany. The bully on the dais does not have does not scare me, but it seems that the public disclosure of ICLEI sure scares Mr. Hill and Mr. Gibson. Again, I want to know what you pledged our community to do as supervisors. Mr. Gibson stated that Agenda 21 is a conspiracy theory. He's using the rules and radical agenda of Saul Alinsky. Look it up. Read about Saul Alinsky. What was he trying to do? He was trying to create a non-capitalistic United States, and the way he'd do it is, first of all, he has to deny someone that disagrees with him, and then they vilify them. Oh, that's what you're trying to do. I think the bullies on the pulpit need to be changed. Why was Mr. Hill, I think it was Mr. Hill, it was removed from the APCD board? I think that was from some bad conduct. I think that was Mr. Hill. Or was it Mr. Gibson? Again, I suggest that you start being more civil to the rest of the people on the staff and the supervisors. I suggest you open your eyes and listen and see what the public are trying to find out and learn. And I suggest you to have an open hearing on what is ICLEI and what is Agenda 21. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Veek. Mr. Kirkland, followed by April McLaughlin.
Thank you very much. I didn't know what the carcinogen is until I got down here, and I signed up a little late for that. But there was one comment I wanted to make about that. The Libertarian Party has this concept. It's called there's no such thing as a free lunch. And it's kind of the core principle of our program. And I heard today a man talking about this medical program that he's talking about, and he said everything was free. And I want to just disagree with that. Nothing he did was free. The time and effort that the people work there, that's not free. Somebody has to pay for it. Somebody has to pay for the support of those people. And one of the arguments for this, quote, free is that somebody else should pay for it. I had a lady who I went to a doctor's office, and she said if every one of us paid just a little bit, then none of us would have to pay very much for our medical care. And she was supported this Obamacare, and I call that socialized medicine. And I want to extend that to the idea that I have a house, and I need you people to pay my mortgage. If every one of you would just pay a little bit, then I wouldn't have to pay very much for my mortgage. Also, I have a car that I drove. It's a truck. I have payments. I want all of you to pay for my payments. When does this stop? When did we take away personal responsibility? And now it's the government or somebody else's responsibility to take care of my issues. And I see that in the presentations here, that it's somebody else's responsibility that to take care of my problems, not mine. And I'll turn them over to somebody else. And as far as I'm an environmental thing, being a biologist, I know that when you destroy an environment, you just create a new environment. And when people say we're going to destroy the environment, no, you're not. You create a new one. A sewer is an environment. It's where organisms live. And pollution is putting something there that I don't want. And if you throw trash beside the road, you create a home for an earwig. No matter what you do, you create an environment. On another,
I came to such a tough crowd. I apologize because my stuff is a lot lighter. And I do believe that if you were to sign a pledge and support the Oceano Community Farmers Market, there would be a lot less controversy. So I'm here for that. September 28th, we will be having a fundraiser at the Rock and Roll Diner in Oceano to help raise the funds that the county and the state and the various agencies charge us to create a farmer's market. It is from noon until 4 o'clock. I have tickets available if anybody would like to buy them, but please at least tell the community that there will be a farmer's market in Oceano starting in spring of 2014. And unfortunately, while we don't have a supervisor to represent us currently, we are in the process of becoming a 501c6. And that's required in order to present and ask for discretionary funds from the Board of Supervisors. The state of California has decided that the name Oceano Community Farmers Market is much too similar to the Santa Cruz Community Farmers Market, and they had denied our name. So clearly government at its best. So We're in the process of getting that fixed. But in the meantime, we cannot ask for any help financially because we do not have that 501c6 status, and that is required by your board. So I just wanted to let you know that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McLaughlin. Mr. Sasania, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning, Board. My name is Chuck Sasania, Los Osos resident, former member of the Community Service District Board of Directors. Yesterday's LA Times has a wonderful op-ed on groundwater overdraft. Did you know that a third of the water used in California is pumped from the groundwater? 20% of the groundwater pumped in the nation is pumped in California. It's a serious issue that we're dealing with. The bottom line of the story talked about the need for monitoring and management based on science, not politics. And it must include a strong regional and local component. Lately, I've been amazed at how much attention the North County situation has gotten compared to Los Osos, even though our basin was known to be an overdraft way before it was apparent in the North County. For the Tribune, the reason's obvious. It's a story of corporate interest versus the average citizen, and that's a recurring theme across the country as we battle for the soul of this nation. In Los Osos, it was just property taxes that could be generated by build-out, even if it meant overdrafting the basin. So the story is just the average citizen against government mismanagement and inefficiency, and that's an old, boring story. The Los Osos CSD, while not having wastewater project authority, does have an interest in the groundwater basin, even more so than the county. So their letter should not have been a surprise to you. And last week's presentation by Spinmeister Ogren was business as usual. Lots of talk, very little information. We know you're not pumping from the lower aquifers. The real issues are the quality of the water being pumped and whether it could be used in a meaningful way instead of wasted to the bay. Yes, some dewatering had to occur before Broderson could be used, but why not store that water and reuse it on the project? Or store it to pump up there later? As the CSD letter pointed out, Broderson needs testing prior to that treatment plant being online. You don't want to back yourself into that corner. And if the water could have been potable with only denitrification, then you are wasting our drinking water. The regional board raised these issues in their letter in early August. Responding to their letter is not necessarily cooperating and communicating with them. It sounds like there was no communication before the wasting of the water to the bay. And the response that you did give, and we got no details about that cooperation and communication from Pavo, just that we're talking with them. In their response, you pretty much just stated that the wasting to the bay was the contractor's first option, so it's not just the CSD that you dismiss. And by the way, this board is not the one that stopped work on the Midtown project to try and work out a compromise with the State Water Board over an out-of-town treatment plant. The State Water Board's embarrassment over the granting of that unsecured loan led them to pull that loan prior to the 30 days that we had to reconsider that project. That was the bankruptcy. And why don't you diss the prayer boards that duped us into an assessment in the middle of town over a faulty EIR? Is it because you share their arrogance and hubris? And that's Wizard of Oz is probably your favorite movie, and I can guess which character you wanted to be as you hide behind that curtain.
Thank you, Mr. Sasania. Mr. Margetson, followed by Jerry Walsh.
Richard Margetson. Ms. Arnold, how did it feel last week to be scolded? Did you go back to your office and write on a chalkboard 100 times, "I will be a better supervisor"? Coming from these two supervisors? Mr. Hill wants you to get a staff report on Los Osos. This is a supervisor who in 4.5 years has not asked one question of substance. Not one question of substance on the wastewater project in Los Osos. Not one. Go back through the tapes. Mr. Gibson, same five people come on a regular basis. These are your words. With assertions that operation with staff as you want, because I know those issues inside and out, and I'm as qualified to talk about them as any of your staff members. And I know I'm more qualified to talk about them than you are. Chuck brought up about the CSD. He was a member of the CSD that stopped the project that was going to put all of the water up at Broderson. That's a major change in this project. This project said that Broderson couldn't take it all. Chuck Sasina is a hero in Los Osos
to more than 50% of the people that stopped the project. And in the survey that your public works put out that asked where you would want the project if you had a choice, go back and look at the response to that question. Well over 80% of the community said they would have the project out of town. But we were the vocal minority, the 5, the 10, the 15, on a regular basis. But we moved a sewer. Chuck and that board, they're heroes in Los Osos to the majority of the people.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Ms. Walsh, followed by Keith Swanson.
Jerry Walsh, advocate for Los Osos, California, United States of America, where there is still free speech. I haven't been to this board since Ms. Arnold came about on the board. I welcome you, Ms. Arnold. We may not agree on everything, but I really like having a woman on the board now. And I was hoping that you might be able to temper some of this free-flowing testosterone around here. But I've heard that a few of the board members, or I should say two of the board members and some of the staff, have been behaving badly. Outright lies, bullying, bashing our CSD. Number one outright lie with Pavo saying that the current CSD is the same one that stopped the sewer project. Not one member of the current board was on that board. That's been repeated over and over again. And Mr. Gibson, you are just as culpable for that lie. Your silence sustained that lie and sanctioned that lie. You had the opportunity to correct your staff, which you never do. We were told that we couldn't put our septage water into the bay. That was one of the big things about having the sewer. We couldn't pump that septic tanks into the upper aquifer and into the sewer. Why now can you pump it directly into the bay? It was either a lie then or it's a lie now. Which is it? You can't have it both ways. And Mr. Meacham, I didn't include you in any of those thoughts. But now I ask you, you said you wanted to be able to do something for the county. We are asking you to help us with our water issues, not sewer. AB 2701 did not take the water issues away from the purview of our CSD, our Golden State Water, and our S&T Mutual. And that's all the two of you had to say about it. AB 2701, you can't do anything about the sewer. Well, you all can do something about our water and our lack of it. It's not a political issue. It's a water issue. It's simply water is the truth. My father passed away a year and a half ago. The only public meeting he came to was the meeting of the original board, original CSD board, when they were trying to take away our three-minute speeches. He sat as a silent testimony to when we held up our signs, over 100 people coming to the CSD meeting, we want our 3 minutes. Ever since then, we've been having to fight for this. My father fought in the Philippines in World War II for our freedom of speech, and damn it if you are ever going to take it away from us. 800 people had these signs in their households, move the sewer. These are the people we are representing. Over 1,000 people came to our park to have a picture taken, move the sewer. We are not just five people. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walsh. And Mr. Swanson, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Swanson, as you come to the lectern, our rules of procedure are to have speaker slips in before the start of public comments. Since you hadn't been here in a while and since we have a light morning, we'll go ahead and slot you in right now.
I appreciate that. Keith Swanson, Los Osos. Last week, I was upstairs and my wife came up and she was in tears. She just watched the replay of this meeting. The absolute abrasiveness of Mr. Gibson against you, Ms. Arnold. And I just want to thank you for representing Los Osos since our supervisor doesn't. I appreciate your courage, your reservation, and your composure in putting up with callous treatment, this lack of collegiality and tolerance that they're supposed to espouse. They don't demonstrate that. Apparently, they have no respect for women in power or anyone who disagrees with you to before all of that, to retort everything Los Osos has to say, and then completely misrepresents everything that was said, and then demonstrates with inaccurate information. I remember, Mr. Gibson, you saying over and over again, we've got to stop this 1 million gallons worth of wastewater that's going into the bay every day. There's never, ever been any proof of that. But you said it over and over again until this project started. Mr. Ogren, you know, again, brought up the fact that the CSD stopped this project. No, they didn't. The current board did not do that. But as I said, the prior board that recalled those prior members wanted to stop this project because it's the middle of the town. And for him to bring this up, which had nothing to do with anything, I think it's just buffoonish.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. That concludes public comment. Items not on the agenda. Ms. Arnold?
I just had a couple of comments to make regarding our public comment. And first one, Mr. Kirkland came to the mic and asked or spoke about a little bit about the Affordable Health Care Act. I want to just remind the folks out there that are listening to us today that there will be another panel discussion. There still are so many unanswered questions everywhere I go regarding the Affordable Health Care Act. In this case, the Latino Outreach Council will be hosting a panel discussion right here in this board chambers on Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock. So it's another opportunity for the citizens out there to be able to ask some questions and hear from some professionals on the topic. My second comment is I would like to ask again when the next scheduled update on the Los Osos sewer project is scheduled for us to hear here in the board chambers and for the public to hear. And then my third comment goes back to the many speakers who have come here before us for several weeks now. And, you know, I know a lot of these people, and I know a lot of them are veterans who fought for this country and, more importantly, fought for the freedoms we enjoy. And out of respect for them, as citizens of our county, and also out of respect for the public process, I did receive a briefing privately in my office by planning staff, our acting planning director, Cammie Griffin. So I would like to respond to these folks. That's all I can do right now to answer your questions. I was told that our planning staff, a member of our planning staff here at the county, James Caruso, did present at the conference that many of you referenced. This was a conference in Santa Barbara that was hosted by many different organizations, one being ICLEI. Our planner, James Caruso's topic, and I did not attend the conference, so I'm just sharing with you what I was told, focused on energy efficiency. Energy efficiency sounds like maybe one of the principles that we would all agree on if that's something that's being promoted by ICLEI. But I do appreciate that you have concerns about an organization that is influencing the land use policies of our county. You absolutely have the right to come here and express those concerns, and I hope that at some point we will be able to discuss it publicly with our planning staff. I feel the same way about the Los Osos folks. At some point, I think we would be better off welcoming your comments. How are we doing out there? How are you feeling about your community? How are you feeling about the policies that are being implemented? And be able to just discuss and debate them as part of the public process. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. And just in response to the one question, I'm working with staff on when the next Los Osos wastewater project item is going to come to the board. It'll be somewhere between 2 and 6 weeks, depending on a couple of things that are outside our control at this point. With that, I would propose to press on. We have two items, unless... okay. Madam Clerk, if you would introduce our next item, please.
Item number 20, presentation of options for agricultural producers' access to California Department of Food and Agricultural, labeled difenoconazole and chlorpheniconazole rodenticide baits.
Difenoconazole and chloro something or fascinone. Fascinating both.
Fascinating.
Mr. Sedevendemi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. My name is Marty Sedevendemi, and we're going to need just a minute to get this presentation going. But before I get into 1,763, the change in the general fund should read 28,995, and the cost recovery should read 68%. And then the last change is on page 9, under financial considerations, the amount reading 31,317 should be 28,995.
And have you provided those changes to the clerk?
We did.
She's very quick, but
we did.
Good.
So, with those changes being read, I'll go ahead and start with my presentation. First of all, I wanted to give you a brief history on the rodenticide program in San Luis Obispo County. First of all, back in 2009, my department did sell rodenticide baits. We sold both difenoconazole and chlorpheniconazole baits. However, to address a mid-year budget cut in 2009, we did remove that program from our department, and that was voted on by the Board of Supervisors at the time. At that time, we did research, and there was identical baits available from Kings County and Monterey counties, and those baits were available at about 20% lower in price than we were charging. Fast forwarding, about 20%. Then moving forward to today, these baits are still available from Kings County and Monterey counties. And they're still below our 2009 prices. Next slide. And just to give a little background on your board's direction, you first asked that we determine if government is the correct supplier of these baits, and you asked us to determine if private sector could sell these baits. And to answer those two questions up front, the label for these baits specifically states that only the agricultural commissioners in California can sell these baits. So that answers the question as to the appropriateness of our department selling the bait or an ag commissioner selling the bait, and also it precludes private industry from selling the bait unless they achieve their own label and go through the registration process to label a pesticide. You also asked that my department provide options for access to CDFA-labeled baits, and in that direction you asked that there would be no effect on the county's general fund and that there would be no effect to my department's current level of programs and services to the community, and you asked that we involve the agricultural community in the discussions. So in line with your last recommendation to involve the ag community, we did convene a bait advisory committee, and the representation for that committee was the County Cattlemen's Association, Farm Bureau, the Independent Grape Growers of Paso Robles, Farm Supply, UC Cooperative Extension, Cal Poly. We had an independent producer, and also my department was involved, obviously. We also consulted with other agricultural producers, other county agricultural commissioners, and the California Department of Food and Ag. The Bait Advisory Committee had a few general recommendations. First was that my department increase outreach and education related to rodenticide bait use and squirrel control. And some of the components of outlined in that recommendation were to provide integrated squirrel control techniques, outreach on that. It would be a good forum to remind producers that they can order bait early from Kings or Monterey County, and that would ensure that those counties would be able to assess demands and be able to keep up with their supply. It would also be a good forum to remind producers of their ability to coordinate large purchases of bait, and that would give them a price break if they were buying over 1,000 or over 10,000 pounds, whatever it might be. It would also be a time where we could review the labels of these rodenticides to ensure that they're being properly used and legally used. We could administer the private applicator certification exam, which is now a requirement for these baits as they have become federally restricted. And there was also a recommendation to include outreach to our non-agricultural rural property owners, because these individuals with 5 or 10 acres also have squirrel problems, and if we can help them get on board with controlling their squirrel problem, then that could lessen the impact to adjacent agricultural properties. And then related to reinstating a program, a local program of bait sales, the committee recommended that if this were to happen, that bait would be offered at the lowest possible price, that there would be no effect on the county's general fund, and also that there would that the bait committee discussed. The first option is to increase our local outreach and education on ground squirrel control and the use of bait, to keep status quo the sources of bait available in Kings County and Monterey County. And some examples of those costs, as I kind of previously outlined, is chlorofacinon would cost $88.69 per bag, difacinon $80.63. In Monterey County, a bag of difacinon would be $79.72. And these are 50-pound bags. The price does include a sales tax, the mandated CDFA surcharge, and they are all picked-up prices from the source. Option two reinstates the local bait program at 100% cost recovery, and this would require an additional 0.25 FTE of staffing and all expenses to provide the service to customers, and it would be offset completely by fees. An example of those costs would be chlorofacinon would cost $160.08 per bag, difacinon $146.87. And again, those are 50-pound bags with tax and surcharge included. And these are based on historical sales and estimated current expenses. And then option three is to reinstate the local bait program at about 68% cost recovery. And while this is not in line with your board's direction or the committee's recommendation, we just wanted to illustrate what general fund contribution would be required to bring down the cost of the bait. And so this would also require a 0.25 FTE of staffing augmentation and a general fund contribution to the department of $28,995. And that would bring the cost of the baits to, with chlorofacinon being $170.89 and difacinon being $94.67. Again, 50-pound bags, tax and surcharge included. And these prices are based on historical sales and all non-salary expenses. And then this next slide just outlines what these options look like side by side. And as you go across the annual program costs, you can see that the first option has no cost to the county. Option two has a cost of $92,085. And option three has a cost of $89,763. And the reason that number three is a little bit lower is because with a lower priced bait, there would be lower taxes, sales tax imposed on those sales. The annual program revenue, option one, there's no revenue, number two being $92,085 to get 100% cost recovery. And then number three, revenues of $60,768 would yield a 68% cost recovery. So those are the options side by side. And then on the next slide, I just wanted to provide some links to information about ground squirrel control for anybody in the public who is interested in reading up on that. And with that, I'll answer any questions that your board might have.
Thank you, Mr. Sedevan-Demme. Questions from the board? Ms. Arnold.
Thank you, Marty. I know you went to a lot of trouble. I know that it started with my request. So my first question is, In your opinion, does the well, this year was an overpopulation, I think we could all agree, but years like this pose, in your opinion, pose a health risk to everyone in the county and also results in crop damage to our agriculturists, years like this?
Sure. I think that if there's in the past 10 years, there has not been a report of plague related to squirrel populations. However, that is a possibility. And yes, if populations get high enough, they could have an impact on crops.
So then my comments are simply, I appreciate all your time. I heard from the Cattlemen's Association, some of the other ag organizations that I attend, that they're willing to accept, I think it was your option one, that just said, well, hey, we'll go ahead. We'd prefer to go to Kings County, to Hanford, and get our bait when we need it than to pay the double the cost here at home. So my original intent was to make it more convenient. We have lots of programs in this county where we attempt to address the health and safety of our citizens as well as in your office, support our agriculturists to have successful crop production. So my intent at the beginning was to be able to subsidize less than $30,000 to make available bait. I think where I was worried about this is
met with, that has increased dramatically, and I would assume, purely assumption on my part, but I would assume that by doing that, you did get the buy-in for most folks to say they're okay with the way it is now, knowing that they have this available to them.
Yes, I think with a little more information in hand that they were feeling that the option one was probably the most feasible option. I think that doing more outreach is necessary. When we cut the program, we did outreach for about a year, and then we kind of thought that everybody knew what was going on, and I think that we could have continued that outreach.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the work you did on this.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. I do have one request to speak. Ms. Crabb from the Farm Bureau.
Good morning, Jackie Crabb with the Farm Bureau. I just want to be real brief. I'd like to extend a thank you to Debbie Arnold for bringing this to our attention, the ground squirrel population, the potential health risk, and the economic damage that we are seeing from this year. And also encouraging us to find a solution, that solution, one of them being revamping the bait program. Another extension of a thank you goes to the Ag Commissioner, and as usual, it's been a pleasure working with them, and it was very educational for all of us. And lastly, just to repeat that the Ag Department's bait cannot be handed over to the private sector because it belongs to the California Department of Food and Ag, and it's a very popular preferred bait that the Ag folks use. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crabb. We'll go ahead and close public comment. Bring it back to the board for action, please.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we I think this is a receive and file item, correct? Or no? We need to actually vote on which option we prefer.
Yes, the recommendation was to review the options and provide direction. So yes, if you'd want to provide direction about.
So I'll make a motion that we accept option one.
Second.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Arnold, Mr. Meacham. Seeing no further discussion, I think we can take this on a voice vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you, sir. Thank you and your department for all the work. Madam Clerk, our final item of the day, please.
Item number 21, request to create a new capital project for development of final construction documents for the new terminal at the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport and authorize a budget adjustment in the amount of $584,250 from the Federal Aviation Administration Airport Improvement Program grant and $30,750 from the Passenger Facility Charge Fund.
Ms. Pell, you're going to start us off?
Yes, I do. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Jeanette Pell, the General Services Agency Director. And today we are here, I'm here with Richard Howell, to request the board approve a capital project to develop construction documents for the new terminal. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank Richard Howell Today is his last day with the county. He has given us 5 very good years of dedicated service, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you.
And Craig Piper is here as well. He will be acting in Richard's place until we find a replacement. So with that, I hand it to Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, welcome, Mr. Howell.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you. I am Richard Howell, soon to be ex-general manager for the County of San Luis Obispo. What we want to talk with you about today is kind of the next step in our process that we've been moving forward for about a couple years now, and which is potential construction documents for a proposed terminal building. I wanted to share that Dennis Iskra, our lead architect with Reynolds, Smith & Hills, is in the audience today also. If they have any, you have any questions that I can't seem to field for this, then I'll put him on the spot. So we've done a lot in the past on this. I just wanted to briefly go over a number of these things because they are germane. In 2010, we received a grant from the FAA for terminal design. In 2011, your board approved the consulting services contract with Reynolds, Smith & Hills that included one of the projects in the scope was a new terminal project. In March of 12, you approved the terminal design development project, which I've been coming back to you a couple times over this year, which was March 5th and July 23rd, to go over the first phase and the second phase of that project. Where we are right now, and I'm kind of putting a little bit of the cart before the horse. I'll explain to you as we go further why I'm here today talking about this instead of waiting until after the design project. But what we are looking at today is the project for construction documents. When the existing design development project is complete, we will have about a 30% design set of construction documents as a result of that project. So construction documents themselves is the next and final step in the terminal design where we would have 100% construction. We'd have a project ready to go. The next step would be put it out for bid and get someone to build it for us. And one of the reasons I'm here now, is while that other project is still on by the end of the year, that money would be returned to the FAA, and that money is what would have been used had we gone into a bid phase for the construction itself. So we'll be giving that money back because that's not our intent by the end of the year, middle of next year, to go into construction, so we're not going to need to bid a contractor. But we will be able to reapply for that funding going down the road if the board so elects to do construction. That would be part of our construction grant we get from the FAA. So the timetable we're looking at is I'm here with CD commencement for September. As I kind of mentioned, time is of the essence. There's a lot we can do. We're looking for the design project to be completed to mid to late October. If you approve this project today, there's processes that our consultant can put in place. There's processes that the airport can be involved in so that when the final design, the design development project comes to you and you say, okay, this is good, we like it, we'll be able to push right into it and meet this year-end deadline for the construction documents. So that's basically the reason that I'm here with you today. Just try to set the stage so that when the design development project's done, we can move right into construction documents and spend that money, essentially. So some things for you to consider, if you approve this today, if we ensure the drawdown of the grant by year end, we need to get that done for the FAA. It ensures completion of a construction document project. You'll have a full set of documents in your possession to move forward with. It doesn't commit you to constructing a new terminal. It does have you have a project available to you should you elect to do so. And then we don't know whether it's ever going to happen again, but the whole shovel-ready term we heard a couple of years ago when talking about federal funding and all that, you would have a shovel-ready project if some money were to become available from FAA to assist with the project moving forward. If we don't move forward with this and wait till we finish up the design development project, well, it really constrains the design team's ability to meet the FAA deadline to get the grant spent by the end of the year. Moving into 2014, there probably wouldn't be any funding available to us, and so any remaining work that would be done on the project would have to be funded by airport services. And probably the biggest thing is if we don't get this grant spent out, demonstrate to the FAA that we're going to do this project and get it done and spend this design grant out. That $18 million we talked about in July that we're looking at from the feds, it would be tough to make a case to them, say, okay, we're doing this, we're getting it done, we need $18 million, please give it to us. And it'd be a little challenging for us to make that case to them if we didn't get this grant spent out by the end of the year. Just looking ahead as to what you can expect to see in the future, of course, as I said, the approval of the design development project will come back to you sometime in October. CD completions, construction document completion by the end of the year. At some point in time, there's going to need to be a local commitment to the construction project itself, and once that commitment has been made, then the acquisition of the Airport Improvement Program funding for construction from FAA can really move forward in earnest. So looking at this project, we're looking at about $584,250 FAA share, $30,750 from our PFC account that we all already have on hand. Total project cost about $615,000. And as I said, at the end of this project, probably about $421,890. It depends on how the project plays out, but based now on our estimates, about that $421,000 would be going back to the FAA at year end. So we're recommending the creation of a capital improvement project to create final construction documents for the new terminal at San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. And we're looking for a budget adjustment amount of $584,250 from an FAA Airport Improvement Program grant and $30,750 from the passenger facility charge fund at the airport.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Howell. Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Richard, thanks for all your work that you've done, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate that. In regard to the final construction drawings being completed, and then we have until, you said, next July to make the determination to go forward with construction?
No timeline on that.
Okay, but isn't there kind of a drop-dead date somewhere along the line that the construction drawings become a little bit obsolete or archaic?
They start aging. Yeah, if you don't use them immediately, they start aging. I mean, in our process, when we first embarked on this, we were hoping to have construction documents. We were planning on finishing construction documents in July of 14. When we met with the FAA and they didn't want to extend the grant that far, even though it's within their same federal fiscal year, and so we started taking a look. So we already knew that by the time we were getting around to any potential construction, which would have been in the spring of 15 or later, depending on the federal funding, that there would be that case, that the documents would age a bit.
So I think all things considered, what is the anticipated lifetime of these construction drawings?
I think, Mr. Iskren, why don't you speak to that for me real quick?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think the answer to that question is there's no lifetime necessarily. Codes will change. That's what really ages a building, a set of construction documents. The cost to come back to an old set of drawings,
function of their funding cycles. They have 5-year funding cycles, and we've had conversations with them about that. And this project right now, the construction of this facility right now isn't in their federal funding process right now. So that's one of the reasons we were looking at 15 as the earliest that we'd even begin thinking about it.
And then a follow-up question to the cost in terms of, let's say we build it. Have we projected out any additional costs that are going to be necessary to support the airport in the years to come?
That'll be part of what will happen during construction documents, where we have more idea of what the systems are going to be in the building right now. At this point in time with the design development, we know there's going to be HVAC, we know there's going to be plumbing, we know there's going to be these certain systems, but we haven't gotten to the point of, okay, it's going to be XYZ system, and that's going to cost us so much a year to operate and manage and moving forward.
Compared to what we do now?
Correct.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Richard, and we certainly wish you best in your next phase. Speaking of that, I see this as simply, it's good that there aren't these other commitments. It's just basically at this point not losing the grant so that we, at this phase in the proposed project, we move forward. A lot of what we have heard about improving the airport, enhancing the airport, has come from the business community and probably one of the better developments over the last, in a long time really, has been the commitment from the business community through the auspices of the EVC. I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's over 700,000 pledged right now to support the flight to Denver that so many people have been asking for, so that it make it easier for people that are traveling back east. What we've understood through use of our consultant is for smaller airports like our own, to get a flight like that guaranteed, we pretty much have to pay for it, basically buy out the seats so that everything's covered. So it looks like we're well on our way to making that happen, which is encouraging to me. So while that's not especially connected to this or even the future, I do see that there is a sense from the business community, at least, when we've said a couple of times we need you to, you know, to do more than and then talk the talk. I think they are making that commitment. So I'm hoping that we move forward with this, and we'll have a chance in next month, I believe, to look. Or no, when will we have a chance to see more of the proposed project after this?
The design's finishing off the design project will be next month.
Okay, great. So those are my thoughts.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Arnold.
And I, too, want to say thanks to Mr. Howell. Take this quick opportunity. It's been a pleasure working with you, and I wish you well. My question, and for the benefit of the folks that are listening to our hearing here, some of these modifications to the terminal are necessary for FAA compliance, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. My one question is, in moving forward with the concept design, the 30% documents, it was my understanding, as we gave direction last time, that conclusion of phase three, also there was some work to be done on figuring out the finances of the ultimate project, how much the county might have to and ways in which the county might find the money to do that. And those 30, I just wanted to confirm that those 30% documents will give us a fair idea of what we might be looking at in terms of cost to build.
That's correct.
Right?
That's correct. I mean, that number will continue to evolve in the construction document process simply because, like I said, we'll know what ABC HVAC system will be.
That's an important decision point, and the question of the operating expense, to the extent that that can be wrapped into that, I think that gives the board real important facts to make decisions over, important estimates to make decisions on going forward on that. Thank you. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll open and close the public comment and bring it back to the board for action. Mr. Hill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be happy to move staff's recommendation on this item.
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Ms. Arnold, without further discussion pending, I will ask for a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. And with that, best of luck, Mr. Howell.
And I wanted to thank the board for your support over the years. Thank you very much. It's been appreciated.
New adventure for you. With that, and having no closed session today, we are finished with the day's business, and we are adjourned until next week.